Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. Time is 5 minutes after 9 a.m., February 8th, 2022. With me today is Co-Chair Bishop, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Olson's coming in the room, Senator Welikowski, Senator Wilson, and Senator Hoffman. We have two items on the agenda this morning. The first one will be an economic outlook for Moody's Analytics. And then it'll be, we'll switch to the co-chair who will take up Village Safe Water capital projects. It'll be one of our, the beginning of the capital budget discussion. And we'll have many of these meetings going forward as we try to take a look at the capital issues around the state and how we want to deal with it. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and have Mr. Dan White, Senior Director, Economic Research, Moody Analytics. He's online. If he could come on and start his presentation after he introduces himself and who he represents. Mr. White, are you on? We'll have a brief at ease. Back on the record, please. Mr. Dan White, if you can you hear us? Mr. White? We'll come back off the record at ease.
On the record, we're going to go to our DEC presentation, Village Safe Water and Wastewater Programs. Here to present are Ruth Kostick, Admin Services Director for DEC, Randy Bates, Director of Division of Water, Carrie, is it Bohan, Facility Service Manager, Program Manager? If I didn't get that right, you'll correct me when you come to the table and put yourselves on the record, and please do that. And let's start your presentation, and I'll take a look at the end of each slide just to see if we have questions. And we'll take them at the end of each slide as we move through the presentation. So, good morning and welcome.
For the record, this is Carrie Bohan. I'm the Facilities Programs Manager in the Division of Water at the Department of Environmental Conservation.
And who do we have sitting next to you?
And for the record, Ruth Kostick, Administrative Services Director for DEC.
All right. Well, welcome. Good morning. Please proceed.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here to share some information about the Village Safe Water Program. Our mission is to support communities, rural communities, in their efforts to improve sanitation. Our clientele, if you will, our customers, are communities generally with a population of less than 1,000. There are some exceptions to this. Second-class cities such as Kotzebue and Bethel are also eligible for Village Safe Water. And we accomplish our mission in two ways. We provide funding to conduct planning, design, and construction of water, wastewater, and solid waste projects. In addition, Village Safe Water administers projects on behalf of a subportion of the communities.
Please proceed.
We wanted to share an image with you here of the funding need, the known funding need in Alaska for rural sanitation. This is information data compiled in the Indian Health Service's Sanitation Deficiency System, known as SDS. And so the total identified funding need is $2.27 billion at this point. This is based on information through last fall. And the most significant portion of that is for first-time service for unserved communities with smaller needs related to upgrading existing facilities to target health effects, beneficial health impacts, and then also a portion is simply for more operations-related improvements.
Okay, so Senator Hoffman, did you want to make a comment on this slide?
Not this time, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I'll just throw it out there, and then maybe it'll generate a little conversation at the table. So we've talked a lot about deferred maintenance in the state system, and with that being said, we know we've got $2 billion in deferred maintenance between the university and the state assets. We know we've got $1 billion in bulk fuel upgrade shortfalls, and now we have another $2.3 billion for rural water sanitation needs. But we looks like we need another $1.3 billion just to get those people hooked up with first-time service. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so this $1.3 billion, would that get rid of the honey buckets in every village?
That would be, yes, the first service for those communities.
So just for conversation for those at home and around the state, so between our deferred maintenance and buildings, bulk fuel upgrades, water, wastewater to take the honey bucket out, we're north of $5 billion of need in this state. Just a data point. Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. We've provided in your handouts a sheet that lists the unserved communities, and this is just a summarized list here on the slide. So our definition of an unserved community is one in which less than 55% of the homes are served by pipe service or a decentralized system such as a septic tank and a wastewater system like a well, or a covered hall system. And on the image on the screen, there's asterisks near a handful of these communities. Those are, and I believe it's mirrored on your handout, those are communities in which funding has already been committed to provide service. In some cases, that will be pipe service, such as Shagaluk and Tununik. In other cases, like Lime Village and Crooked Creek, that will be in the form of wells and septics. Also, just for consideration, and it may be valuable as we move through the presentation, in the handout, I've shared data from a 2016 study that was commissioned by Village Safe Water to look at the unserved communities and get a high-level cost estimate of what it would cost to serve those communities with pipes. So do keep in mind that that data is a little bit aged at this point. And then also sharing the estimated monthly user fees that would be associated with those communities receiving pipe service. And again, that's a little bit out of date at this point.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. If it's possible just to get a map and just let us know where those communities are. Are they clustered around a certain area? Are they spread out around the state? Is there a community just right down the street that has water and sewer, and how's that going? And I mean, that, and that's, I think, also just the location. I mean, is there going to be economies of scale? Are they relatively near one another or not at all? And then later on in this presentation, Mr. Chairman, I'm just hoping to talk about scale and complexity of each of these communities, as in, are all of these going to have pretty much the same thing? Like you create something in the engineering, and you just pick it up and you make 50 of them, and you just install them in the community, 50 of the same thing, so there's parts, and there's, you know, knowledge and maintenance that's uniform, standard. Or do you go in and each one of these communities, you absolutely make a complete, unique, uniquely tailored, wholly individual, never repeated system?
Thank you, through the chair. I can touch on some of those now. I think we may also have some information as we move through. The handout does, although it's not a map, it does indicate generally the regions that these communities are in. So the Yukon-Kuskokwim region does have a pretty high percentage. There's a handful in the Norton Sound. Those are the two, I think, and the interior. Those are the areas where there's the highest concentration of the unserved communities. I can also speak a bit to the economies of scale and ability to marry up with other nearby communities. In most of these cases, in fact, I think all, there is not another nearby community. It's not a possibility to connect to an existing system. We provide service to approximately 200 communities, and we're talking about 30 or so communities, which are the most challenging. From an engineering perspective, from just major construction challenges, and also, and we'll get into this further, capacity and sustainability challenges at the community level. There have been some efforts in recent years to look at ways of using economy of scale and to not duplicate efforts, but each of these communities have conditions that are so unique that it's often impossible to replicate one package and move it from community to community. And so they usually do have their own distinct design. Although we've looked into some opportunities for modular units, they have not always provided cost savings as of yet, but it's something we still continue to pursue.
Senator Wilson and then Senator Hoffman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you say that basically an unserved community would be service that has less than 55% on pipe water? Where did that number come from in terms of determining 55 versus 60 or 70?
Through the chair, that is an excellent question that I don't know the answer to, but I would be happy to look into it.
Thank you.
Could you find the answer to this question and then send it back to the committee and get it out to the members? Please. Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, this is a very important issue to Western Alaska, especially during this time of COVID, where washing the hands is critical to trying to keep the COVID down. And I think that Senator Von Imhoff had hit on the question that I asked several times at this table on a cookie-cutter approach, so that we're not spending millions and millions of dollars on design. I think that is strived for, but I think that the department needs to work on it more extensively, given the fact that there are improvements as time goes on. But the question that I have today, that I've had several concerns from my constituents, can you talk about your best practice scoring? Because there are communities that don't agree with your best practice scoring. And how did you come about this, and what impact do you have on feedback from communities out there that are experiencing problems and not getting their water and sewer needs addressed?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I'm happy to discuss that here. We do intend to discuss it later, and so I'm happy to do whichever would be preferable.
I'm waited with eagerness to hear your wisdom on why you think your best practices are actually best practices.
Thank you. Just before we move on, so one of the things I'm going to ask on is we have the projects in the back, but I'd like to have them ranked, just a list of the projects, one through whatever, that are funded. So going, you know, we want that back to the committee. I'm assuming that all these projects on this page are going to be are a go this year.
On the screen here,
yes.
What's on the screen is a list of the unserved communities.
Well, I know some of these communities are in the queue that's been funded for this summer's work, off your paperwork in this document. So. Anyway, we'll want all the funded projects by village on a piece of paper. I know you got it back here, but I don't want to have to maneuver between two pieces of paper to find them. Please. And we got a request for a map. That'll be forthcoming. And last thing I'll say on this slide is 11 of these 34 villages are in the Yukon-Koyukuk district for Doyon. Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
And can we also get population of these underserved communities, so we can have an idea of the size of each one of these in comparison to the rest of them?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we'd be happy to do that. On the handout that we provided with the unserved communities does have the population, but we can wrap all that information that you've requested together.
And you can stop by our office after, and we can, if you got any questions, we'll get it, what we want in our follow-up from you guys. Thank you. Next page.
Thank you. So I just want to touch briefly on what does the average project for serving unserved community for the first time look like. Typically, the costs that we're seeing at this point are somewhere between $500,000 and $750,000 per home. The projects have a lifespan that includes design and multiple years of construction, so they can take between 5 and 10 years to complete. Often that's because funding is allocated in phases to make sure that we're able to fund multiple projects and be making progress in multiple communities at a time. Certainly with the infrastructure bill, which we'll be discussing in a little bit, there are some opportunities to move more quickly on projects to come.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
So thank you. Are these oftentimes just your typical toilets, or are these sort of like the more complex, fancy compost type of toilets?
Through the chair, Senator, generally they're what we would all consider a traditional toilet, although in some communities there are vacuum systems that do have a toilet that functions a little differently than most of us are used to.
Follow up?
Thank you. So I do hope that later in the slide deck, and I think you just alluded to it about the maintenance of these things, because a vacuum toilet obviously is very difficult, or is more difficult to maintain, and if it breaks, how do you fix it? What does it mean to the household? Who's available? Who's got the parts? So I'll pause there, but I definitely, because I've been to a few of these villages where you've taken, I've been to the bookends where you've had the very, very fancy, extremely complex, expensive whole wall of digital dials and so forth, and then I've been to the communities with just four settling ponds. And honestly, the four settling ponds actually works. I don't know if that's appropriate for every community, and again, I'm not a sanitation engineer, I don't know, but I just think that when stuff breaks, it's super hard to fix.
Please continue.
This next slide shares a hopefully simplified view of the various funding that comes to Alaska for rural sanitation. I'll start on the left. The Capital Improvement Program, or CIP, is administered by Village Safe Water, and we combine funds from USDA Rural Development and the Environmental Protection Agency with the required 25% state match. So you'll see that funneled into the circle labeled CIP. For the last several years, the funding amount has been between $70 and $75 million. On the right is the Indian Health Service Sanitation Deficiency System. They combine funding with the EPA Safe Drinking Water, Tribal Set Aside, and the Clean Water Indian Set Aside as well. Funding is allocated from each of these systems to community projects based on the evaluation criteria established for each. The committee that conducts the review of the projects is the same. It's comprised of myself as a representative of Village Safe Water, and representatives of all the federal funding agencies that participate. So it's a very holistic conversation amongst the group to make sure that we're meeting the needs of all the communities in a coordinated fashion. Once the funding has been allocated, either Village Safe Water or the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium provides support to the communities for project administration. And there's a longstanding list of sort of which agency provides support to which communities. And just to be clear, because it's often a point of confusion, if the community is eligible for the funding, it does the project support from Village Safe Water or ANTHC doesn't affect whether a community is eligible. So most communities are eligible for both CIP and SDS funding.
Should there be another? How much is Denali Commission kicking? They're kicking in a little bit. Should they be on here too, just as a footnote, or am I off base? Didn't we get capitalized to a degree with Denali Commission funding?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That you're correct. Recently, I believe in the last 2 years, the Denali Commission has contributed funding that's been allocated through the SDS process. And in fact, on the next couple of slides, you'll see those. those contributions.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff, and then Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. So there are other entities. Senator Bishop mentioned the Denali Commission. I know that the governor has talked about the importance of public-private partnerships, and I agree with that approach. Are you familiar with the Leona Helmsley Foundation grant and for water in Alaska? Can you comment on that, and are you working with them?
Through the chair, Senator, yes, I am familiar to a certain extent with the efforts. They reached out to us, and we put them in contact with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, who has then helped them get in touch with the Norton Sound Health Corporation, and I understand that there's quite a bit of work that is going on at this point. I know we're at Village Safe Water working with them on some projects in Wales. I don't know if there's specific information I can provide, but this is sort of, it's my understanding that they traditionally had worked outside of the U.S., but with COVID, they looked for some opportunities in the U.S. and
just one small follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you. It would be, I think this is an opportunity that I hope that you work with. There are tens of millions of dollars coming in. And yes, while they've worked out of state, or excuse me, worked out of country, there are lessons learned. They have worked extensively in rural areas. Granted, the climate's different. That is true. But I think that it's worth determining to the extent of their knowledge, their lessons learned, and their money. This is expensive. All hands on deck to make this work. Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski, then Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. I would agree. It would definitely be worth seeking outside experts and figuring out if there's what works, what's the most efficient way. I mean, even if you have to pay, well, obviously you have to pay for it, but that'd be a good investment. But my question is, are there federal ARPA funds available for water, wastewater?
Senator, through the chair, there were, and we'll see on the next slide, I believe, some ARPA funds directed through the Indian Health Service that did contribute to some sanitation improvements over the last couple of years.
Thank you. Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
But there's no more, so you're saying there's no more funds, ARPA funds available going forward?
Through the chair, none that I'm aware of at this point.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you know where the city of Togiak is?
I do.
Where is it?
Through the chair, just outside of Dillingham.
North or south?
I believe it's south.
The reason that I bring this up is that the community has been trying to take an initiative to improve their water and sewer. And they had an application in under a different program. I believe it's the microloan application program. And that program was denied, and for reasons that I won't go into, but the community proceeded with AT&HC and took the initiative, took the risk, and built the project and completed the project. The community feels that the work that they asked for assistance from your department has been unfortunate and has hindered their ability to proceed in a more timely manner that would have gotten the project done much earlier. Today, despite the lack of assistance from your department, the residents of Togiak are in a better place. The city, unfortunately, the city has taken the risk. The city and TNHC did not did not come up with a better result. And to this date, ADEC has neither offered, declined, or tried to assist the city of Togiak. And I'm wondering how many other communities are out there that are being hindered by the department, such as Togiak, when they are trying to provide their own initiative, and your department, from their viewpoint, is getting in the way. From their viewpoint, they would be better off if your department would stay out of their business, and we as a state would be better served. I'm wondering if you might comment upon the information that I have gotten from Jason Bruin, the commissioner, a response that even acknowledges much of this. So we have millions of dollars, but we should not be here hindering the people in rural Alaska that have the initiative to proceed forward. I wonder if these are very serious circumstances that are being acknowledged by the commissioner. I wonder if you, as someone in the bottom lines, trying to get this thing done, and you know, and I've been here for many years and worked with many people in the department that I've had very, very good working relationships with. But this particular situation is unnerving, uncalled for, and today I'm wondering, after you answer all of that, what assistance can you do? What kind of things can you do better? And because the city of Togiak is not a typical community, it is a small community, but the people don't deserve the hindrances of big government. I would be eager to hear your response.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Hoffman. I am very familiar with the situation in Togiak. It's actually quite exciting that they were interested in pursuing a loan through the state revolving fund. We've only recently established this microloan opportunity in which we offer Village Safe Water eligible communities the opportunity to apply for a heavily subsidized loan through the state revolving fund. Because it is a loan, the community has to demonstrate certain levels of capacity, and EPA, we worked in coordination with EPA to develop the criteria for that eligibility. And unfortunately, ANTHC and Togiak working together made a decision to move forward on a project counting on the community being able to access the loan funds before they had them in hand. And so they completed the project, and while our partnering agency at the Department of Commerce, the Rural Utility Business Advisor, was working with Togiak to help them improve their scores to be eligible for the loan, they weren't able to accomplish that in a time frame that married well with the project. So we have made some exceptions. We've held their application open, where normally at this point it would no longer be eligible. They would have to start from scratch with a new application. And we've been coordinating with our partners at RUBA in hopes that the community can demonstrate that they're eligible for that loan. And we would still be very happy to make that loan to them. We've also offered an opportunity for them to pursue a traditional state revolving fund loan, which doesn't have as great a term as far as principal forgiveness, but it would still help them move forward to have some form of subsidy while they're still pursuing the microloan. So I do hope that we can find an opportunity with Togiak to still fund this project, and we can do that after the fact. But the microloans themselves are an effort by our department to try and create new funding opportunities for communities that may have traditionally relied upon Village Safe Water grant funds, but are in a position to start taking on some debt as well.
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, do you realize that Western Alaska has some of the highest unemployment in the state, the least amount of income, and it would seem when a community such as this is trying to assist themselves and pull up the bootstraps, you know, did you come forward and ask, well, let's look at these other programs. How many trips were made out to the city of Togiak to assist them in reviewing all of the programs that are out there? You know, the costs to people out in Western Alaska, you know, you're looking at, you know, you're fortunate you live in Juneau where you can get a gallon of milk for a couple of bucks, and they're looking at trying to pay for a gallon of milk for $12 or so. You know, the price of goods out there are extremely expensive. There are very little fresh produces out there. You know, they don't have the luxuries that you have when you live here in Juneau. And when a community wants to pull their bootstraps up, we should be jumping at the opportunity where they're taking that initiative. So where am I going wrong in my thought process? How many times did you go out, your department go out there with the financial experts and try to put a package together if you were not going to be able to do the micro loan? You know, I understand, you know, the fees and the expenses, the numbers have to work out, but you also have to understand that these areas are the highest cost of living, least amount of employment, and the lowest income in the state. Those three factors, you know, the department should be maybe not getting into the weeds and following the letter of the law, but looking at the intent of trying to, what's your mission? Your mission is to provide bureaucratic paperwork, or is it your mission to assist those communities to pull up their bootstraps and get them water and sewer? What is your mission? And how did you fail at that mission for the people of Togiak?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I agree. Our mission is to work with the communities to find all of the opportunities to fund these improvements. And we don't do that as a department on our own. We have many partners. And in this case, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium was leading that effort of funding coordination. And we did call upon our partnering agency with the Rural Utility Business Advisor, where their specialty is finances and management of rural utilities. And we asked them specifically to put some attention and spend some time with Togiak, which I know that they have. As I said, we continue to hope that we'll be able to provide this funding to Togiak. And we will continue to try and find other funds that are available. Unfortunately, those options are not many.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would request, in the last 2 years, how many visits the department made out to that community personally to try to give them assistance, if any. How many times did they actually travel out to the community, look at the situation for a community that's trying to assist themselves, and what was offered to the community? I would really like to get to the bottom of this, because if we can't even assist the people that are willing to go out on a limb and get things done, what hindrances are we providing to the rest of the people on this list? They're the ones that we should be trying to work with. You know, the department, I think, needs to reevaluate their mission. You know, and try to empathize with the people that are living out there that have the highest cost of living, the lowest income, and the fewest jobs. That, I think, is where the department is losing sight of what needs to be done. You know, I understand the situation. It's a difficult situation to be in, but we shouldn't be here hindering the process. And I look forward to an expedited response to the question that I have to use Togiak as an example of what the department should and should not be doing to get water and sewer to the villages that I represent. You know, it's a little frustrating to see all of the turnover in the department, and I would thank the department for the work that they do in getting water and sewer, but they should not be being paid to hinder the communities that want to better themselves. So I'm looking forward to that report, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Moving right along, Senator Wilson, we're going to have to brief at ease. Back on the record, I'm going to stand in for the chairman for a little bit. The first presenter is going to be rescheduled due to technical difficulties today. Moody's will bring him back. And I think the questioning here of the department, we have the commissioner here, or Mr. Bates. You might want to come forward and jump in the fray. Some of these questions may or may not be better answered by yourself. I'll let you three decide those issues. In the lineup, we have Senator Wilson. Were you next? Okay. Then next up will be Senator Olson, I guess. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, let me thank you for, I come from the village of Golovin, which is the smallest community represented here at the table. And so we want to thank you for what you've done for my village, for making sure that we have, when we push the button, the toilet flushes, and when we turn the faucet on, water runs. The problem that I have, though, is that there is a number of communities who have run into difficulties, and as was pointed out by Senator Hoffman, that there are a number of hindrances that are in the way, and it all points as you look at it and sift it through the bottom, what it comes down to is it's this idea that there's so much weight being put on the best practices score. I realize that the best practices score is out there and it should be used, but not used to the point where it actually decides who's eligible and who's not eligible. We're looking for some, looking into what's gone on in the past in 2015 when the eligibility changed to that became disturbing that most of the people that are calling me are saying that, you know, the best practices score has been put in there, and it's a catch-22 situation where they can never catch up if they don't already have a water and sewer system, because they can't go ahead and put together a sustainability plan that you guys are, that the department is, or the division, I should say, is in need of. And so rather than go through the shortcomings that are going on, my plan is to propose that we go ahead and do with the OA with a best practices score that allows that the department to go ahead and try and fund these situation. And I'm fully aware that there's federal issues that are out there. You got the Safe Drinking Water Act that has to be complied with. You got EPA issues that I've already talked about. But I'm wondering, Mr. Beats, I guess I'm asking you, since I've known you the longest, since you've been with DEC almost since when I came to the legislature, what's the best way to go ahead and get rid of this best practices score issue that's so hindering to many of the communities? And I'm not talking about Togiak. Togiak's not in my district, but there are communities in my district, and I counted, I think there's almost a dozen that are on there, whether it's Wales or Diomede. And Ms. Bohan talked about some of the engineering difficulties, and that's a good example of that, part of the extreme example of that. But Mr. Bates, I guess, what are your thoughts on, or how can we find a way to circumvent the best practices score for those communities that don't have the capability of showing a sustainability plan? And would you be in favor of us putting legislation forward to get rid of that?
For the record, Randy Bates, Director of Water, Department of Environmental Conservation. Senator Olson, through the chair, good to see you. I've been with DEC for 2 years, with the state for 22 in different capacities, so I'm happy to be before you again, this time representing DEC. We do have, Ms. Bohan does have a number of slides and some discussion that we had prepared so that we can walk through what we know is a challenging issue, being the best practice scores. Our mission, part of our mission, certainly part of the department's mission, is to assist communities in getting the sanitation and infrastructure that they need. We're tremendously excited about that. We do run into circumstances and challenges, as both of you senators have brought up, and we know there's room for improvement. We do work with our funding partners. We do work with our sister agencies in the state here, being Commerce, to accomplish and achieve capacity, which is a federal provision, a federal requirement under the Safe Drinking Water Act. I don't necessarily know that capacity is going to go away and how we score it, but we're certainly open to that conversation. But, Mr. Chair, Senators, if we can jump a little bit and move ahead in the presentation, Ms. Bohan can talk about those scorings, and then we can get into that conversation again. If we're able to share our perspective.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my question has to do with, do we have the time to go ahead and do that this morning? Because here's what I'm seeing, is that water and sewer is a very important part here in Juneau, and it's no less important out there in Shagalak or any of the communities that I have, Shaktulik, because we're dealing with COVID. And COVID has wreaked such havoc out in rural Alaska, and without adequate water and sewer, we are way behind the curve on how to go ahead and combat that. And that's why communities have been shut down school-wise because of the COVID virus, because so many of these places do not have the adequate water and sewer capability. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I leave it up to you as to how to go ahead and proceed on this.
I'd like to stay in order, because if we don't get it done today, we'll come back and get it done at a later day. But it's an important conversation. But I just want to take a step back, because I don't know as much about Village Safe Water as I do about federal highways. But I'm going to make a comment on best practices. So we're taking part of the King's coin, and that's what lays out the template for your best practices, meaning we've got federal dollars, and you've got to have the mother may I's checked off to qualify for best practices. Is that an accurate statement?
Mr. Chair, fairly accurate.
Okay. The second thing I want to say is, notwithstanding the best practices list, as you've got it laid out, I'm not dinging that. It's just a fact of life. But if we were funding these projects with pure GF, now it's a whole different, isn't it now a different best practices list if you're going straight GF? For some of these, I know it's a kind of an open question, but is that an option too?
Mr. Chair, the answer is yes. If I could expand just, and I'll take less than a minute. The best practice scores have been utilized for many years. They changed in 2015, but we continue to utilize them partially as a method to prioritize projects. We've got more needs in the state than we have funding to satisfy and solve those issues. So we have to find a way, we have to utilize a way to prioritize projects that are ready for funding, and we use that best practice scoring as that method. Recognizing what's coming our way in that infrastructure bill, all of our needs will be funded by that bill. Best practice scores are still relevant, but we don't have that same sort of gatekeeper system that we've had to have for a long time. Everybody's needs in rural Alaska for sanitation purposes will be met through this infrastructure bill.
The $2,300,000,000 are going to be met between the state share and the tribe share? Is correct. That what you just told the committee?
That's correct. So what we're trying to do, and Ms. Bohan will get to that, we're trying to position ourselves. We're talking about VSW FY23, but we also have a clear eye towards the bill and the infrastructure money that's coming, and we're trying to position the state to absolutely take the greatest advantage of that transcendent funding that's coming our way.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
On that point, I understand that, but the point that I'm making is there's systemic problems in the department that need to be streamlined to so we can spend these dollars as best as possible and not hinder the process, so that the people out there can get the best system and get it quicker than what we've seen happen in Togiak. That's the problem. Every single year you delay a project out there puts hardship because we have some of the highest population bases, families with children 4, 5, 6, and 7, and they need to wash their clothes. And by delaying these projects 1, 2, 3, 4 years, that is unacceptable. You know, we have the perfect opportunity here, and we should be greasing the wheels to get these things done instead of providing roadblocks. And I'm fearful that with all of this money, the bureaucracy in the state is, the state of Alaska, your particular department, is going to delay the actual time when people can wash their clothes and take baths and have clear drinking water. You know, I think that we have AT&HC that is out there working, and maybe the state should be looking at contracting with them to get the things done that need to, because they seem to be out in the field every single day doing things. So that may be something, food for thought for the department to consider. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue.
So I'll plan to move through these slides relatively quickly, but this is just an image of historic funding over the last several years, and I'd like to draw your attention to SFY22. There is a very small red line there that you can see. We've called the numbers out in hopes that it's a little more legible. This is the Denali Commission money that was asked about earlier. Also, there are Navy bits of funding, a little bit in state fiscal year 21, but a significant amount in state fiscal year 22 that were various pots of COVID-related funding that went through Indian Health Service. And I'd like to just point out the $39 million under state fiscal year 22. The Indian Health Service and Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium are using a portion of this money to develop in-depth planning documents. They'll be kicking those efforts off, and VSW will be partnering with them in some cases to look at providing pipe service or other reasonable options for enhanced sanitation services in the unserved communities. So this is outside of the infrastructure bill, but it's money that's available now to start moving in that direction of finding what are the right solutions for the unserved communities.
Thank you. Please continue.
And this next slide we did separately because the scale sort of blows the whole thing apart. This is estimated funding for state fiscal year 23. We'll get into some more detail in a few minutes. Village Safe Water is not anticipating a significant increase in funding directly through our federal funding sources. However, the Indian Health Service funding is substantially increased, about three times what has been, or more than three times, actually.
And that money does not flow through your department.
Mr. Chair, thank you. That's a great question. It doesn't flow through our department, but in the instance where Village Safe Water provides lead support for the community, that money will come to Village Safe Water, and we will administer the project on the community's behalf.
So there's another we went from, what did we go from the year before, 79 or 80? We went from
45.
Now we're going to half a billion? In 1 year? Yeah. Are we going to talk about capacity at some point?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we will.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Going back to that slide, that there's 2015 seems to be a turning point with funding relief and eligibility based on best practices. Do you have funding that goes back, I should have asked you this before, goes back to either FY15 or 2015?
Senator, through the chair, we do have historic data that we can provide.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Please bring that to the chair's office. Thank you. We'll distribute it. Okay. By the numbers.
So I'll move through this relatively quickly, but looking at three different categories of funding for the current fiscal year, Village Safe Water and our federal funding partners allocated $1.9 million towards planning projects. Again, these develop a plan to identify potential solutions and cost estimates that would then tee a community up to apply for a construction project. So we want to lay out the problem and a potential solution. We had 19 of those planning documents. And they average around $75,000, but some require some more in-depth research and can cost as much as $180,000. We allocated just shy of $70 million to construction projects, which included 9 ongoing projects and 10 new construction projects. I think I mentioned earlier that we often fund these projects in phases. So some of the smaller numbers you're seeing there, $80,000, probably filling a gap at the end of a project. We also frequently fund design first, so we get a better cost estimate before allocating the construction funding in a subsequent year. Two projects that I'd like to highlight are we committed significant funding, over $20 million to pipe service in Tanunik. Also, a little over $10 million to get started on replacing the entire water distribution system in Unalakleet, which I think has been, there's been a lot of news of constant freeze-ups and leaks and breaks in that community, and it's one of the oldest distribution systems in the state. So over the course of the next several years, we'll be completely replacing that distribution system. In addition, the Indian Health Service and Environmental Protection Agency, through that sort of barrel grouping we saw on the right-hand side of the earlier diagram, allocated over $55 million with a little portion from the Denali Commission to 17 construction projects. And again, they had a wide-ranging dollar value.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, we'll go to the next page.
So I think we are now getting to the meat and potatoes, if you will, of what everyone would like to discuss today. Eligibility for Village Safe Water funding. Communities are eligible for one planning project at a time. Some of these conditions are based on the historic funding levels where we had far greater need than we had funding available to, so we had to be judicious in the allocation. That planning document, as I mentioned a moment ago, has to demonstrate a sound engineering principle for the project and make sure that it's the right project to implement in that community and the community can support the end product. So it includes looking at the technical, financial, and managerial capacity of the system, the community's ability to operate the system.
So on that point, how much do you, and this is anecdotal, I've been into some of my rural villages that had a washateria that was replaced and it was bigger than the one they had and they didn't really want the bigger one. How much do you listen to the community about scalability, affordability, and that's just a anecdotal observation that I've seen in a village. I'd like, you know, how much weight do you put on the local knowledge?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's an excellent point and it's incredibly important. The engineers at Village Safe Water and at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium in developing the planning documents are coordinating with the communities. In addition, we have a committee that reviews all of the planning documents. It's made up of the various federal funders that we've been discussing repeatedly, as well as Village Safe Water. And then we also have the departments, drinking water, wastewater, and solid waste programs that will ultimately have to review and approve the designs for these projects. We bring all of those people together at the conceptual stage to review the proposed projects and make sure that there's no concerns raised. And we also at that point garner feedback from the regional health corporations that work every day with these same communities on their sanitation issues. So we do take as much effort as we can to make sure that what we're doing is appropriate for the communities.
Okay, well, I just want to emphasize that as we talked about the boots on the ground, if you will, just reemphasize that local knowledge, the guy that's running the wastewater water plant after you're gone, and I don't mean that persnickety and being a smart aleck, you know, there is so much knowledge in that local control. I think if they say it's too big, the project planners need to pay attention. That's all I'm saying. Thank you.
Next slide.
So as we've discussed, that one of our eligibility criteria is a demonstration of capacity, local capacity. We do this through the operations and maintenance best practice evaluation criteria. It's something that we developed over the course of several years and started using in 2015. We worked with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and the Rural Utility Business Advisor at Department of Commerce to develop this. We spent quite a bit of time vetting it with our partners at the regional health corporations and ANTHC. And I should take a moment to mention that this was a change to an existing process. Before the implementation of best practices, there were several different capacity assessments that were being used for different funding sources. So Indian Health Service had one form, Village Safe Water had a different form. We were looking to package everything together so that when we as a group were conversing with the communities, they had one focused target, this one sheet that everyone was talking to, and not creating different bars that the communities would have to reach for different funding sources. Also, for Village Safe Water purposes, before the implementation of best practices, communities were eligible to apply for and be granted funds, but then they had to demonstrate capacity by completing what was called a RUBA assessment. It was a 27 items, yes or no questions, and they had to identify compliance with all 27 to access their funding. That the order in which things were happening didn't make great sense. Our federal funds generally have a five-year lifespan, and communities could take several years working with technical assistance providers such as RUBA in order to hit that capacity level, and that has then gobbled up several years of that funding life. In many instances, it jeopardized the federal funding. It resulted in having to allocate the funding to a different project that could move along more quickly. And so it was very intentional to move the capacity evaluation to the beginning of the process. We conduct the scoring twice a year, and we use the score that's developed in the spring for funding decisions. But we think it's really important to keep in touch with the communities on these, and that's why we do the second six-month evaluation. We use the scores also for ourselves and other technical assistance providers to be able to look at the group of communities and the scores as a whole and develop plans for how to allocate resources, particularly when there's limited resources.
Could you explain RUBA to me again? I didn't get it. Is that the acronym, or is that the name, or?
Mr. Chairman, the RUBA stands for Rural Utility Business Advisor.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Senator Von Emhoff.
Thank you. You talked about demonstrating capacity with this compliance questionnaire. Is part of the funding eligibility for any of these communities is to have one, preferably more than one, a couple, designated point people, or at least maintenance people, as in, okay, the village looks around and says, all right, Bill is going to be the guy, and Bill's going to go through significant training. Bill's agreeing to do this. He's going to go through significant training to be part of the build. He's going to be, you know, paying attention the whole time. And then he's going to go to annual reoccurring training and so forth. And Bill's got a phone. Bill's got FaceTime. You know, he's the capability. And if Bill's not there, then there's Dave that can do it as well. So you've got, you know, backup. Because when I've gone to some of these villages and the system is not working, they're like, well, Bill's gone. Bill moved. Well, then who's the other guy? No one. Or whatever. So unless there is a significant investment by a person and a willingness to participate and serve and be the point person, are you finding that that's a problem and sometimes a challenge?
Senator, through the chair, you make a very good point. We will get to some of those specifics in just a moment at the various criteria. We've brought those to discuss in detail if that's what you would like to do. But what you have described is very frequently an issue. All of the communities that have water systems are required to have certified operator under federal and state regulations, but it is challenging. It's a very difficult position. Those individuals are often not given full-time positions, and they're tasked with many things above and beyond just the day-to-day operations of the water treatment plant or the wastewater treatment plant. And so there's very frequent turnover in many of the communities. And these are the types of things that we are looking at, because ultimately our goal is not just to build a one-time solution. We are trying to find a long-term sustainable solution for the community. And if we don't marry up the solution with the needs and the capabilities of the community, we won't have success.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. I'm really glad to hear long-term sustainable solutions. I've been hearing that for 20 years. And it seems as though in 20 years we should have come up with a long-term sustainable solution for these communities. But it's good that it's still on your list. But the slide number 11, I'm glad to see that it is, you're doing these assessments in conjunction with at least anti-HC. But the second bullet point causes me some concern when it says that you're doing twice a year assessment on information provided to DEC. And I say I have a concern because the level of and the capabilities of every community are not the same. So the paperwork that is provided to DEC can range very greatly. And a community that has the finances to hire someone to get this data in versus some of the smaller communities that don't have the necessary personnel to provide the paperwork to pass on the information to DEC can be sketchy. So the concern, the issue that I have is how often does the department go out to these communities and do an assessment, boots on the ground? Because this is when you're going to see the problems that exist out in rural Alaska. And I know many people in state government don't want to leave the comforts of their home, don't want to travel out to Nunuk or to, you know, Shugnak or, and all of these communities that are far flung, you know, because it takes 1, 2, 3 days and they might have to sleep on the gym floor and they might have to eat pilot bread for dinner and no steak and lobster. So I understand the resistance that the departments have to go out to those communities, but do you have people going out at least to 10% of those communities on a yearly basis to do the assessments? Because if you're looking at the data and the data doesn't reflect the actual snapshot that exists out there, your conclusions are going to be flawed.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I will say that the department continues to make traveling to meet the needs of our responsibilities is it's a priority. And I'm appreciating now there are things that are coming that would inform this part of the conversation. But the Village Safe Water Program funds through partnerships with the Regional Health Corporation's Remote Maintenance Worker Program. So they act on our behalf in hub communities throughout the state. We also have some DEC employees who provide this exact same service out of the Anchorage office. So they're assigned to travel to a subset of communities. They're each assigned 10 to 15 communities where they provide on-site technical assistance and training. And they make collectively 15 individuals make on average more than 200 site visits a year. Now that has certainly been impacted by COVID, but there is travel that's resuming when the communities are comfortable with having their remote maintenance workers visit. The Rural Utility Business Advisor Program, or RUBA, was originally established in DEC, but was quickly moved to the Department of Commerce in about 1990 to provide the same type of assistance, but focused on financial and managerial capacity of sanitation utilities. They also have, they're all state employees, but they're housed in hub communities as well, and they're responsible for making trips to work with communities on they sort of marry up local government work with utility-specific financial and managerial capacity. So while we don't have a large number of DEC staff in Village Safe Water that are going out to do these assessments, our partnerships with those two programs that we fund are doing that on behalf of the department. Additionally, I have staff who are assigned to about a third of the communities for providing engineering support, and they do visit the communities during project development, identifying new needs, excuse me, and as we're moving towards design and construction of projects, they are visiting the communities as well.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The largest hub, obviously, is Bethel that I represent, and they service the most number of communities in the state, which is 56 villages, covering a vast, sprawling district of a size that's greater than the state of Washington. And I know Dan Winkleman, I've known him personally, who's the who heads the Yukon Custom Health Corporation, and he does an outstanding job. But regarding this issue, I will be in communication with him to see how he rates the systems that you're talking about. But the question that I have is that when you're doing this analysis, do you give the underserved areas a greater proportion of the funding formula compared to the served areas, or how do you address the underserved? Do they get a larger proportion of the funds so we can make honey buckets obsolete? How is that very sensitive issue addressed by the department?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, there isn't a distinct separation in how much funding is going each year to served communities versus unserved. As I mentioned before, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and Indian Health Service are just launching these planning documents to look at the appropriate next, the appropriate service, what project would best meet the needs of the unserved communities. Those will inform our funding decisions for those communities, and they, once those planning documents are complete, those will be the highest priority. We've been working through, with the limited funding that's been available, we've been working through planning documents such as that for the unserved communities. So we don't have a definitive breakdown in the funding, but we do, and we'll get to this in a future slide, projects to support unserved communities will always get the highest score in the health consideration category, which lends itself to those being the top of our funding list.
Okay, next slide, please.
I have one follow-up.
Follow-up.
The question that I have is, since we do funding on an annual basis, what is the purpose of having these communities scored twice a year?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, there's two purposes. One is that, when we touched on this earlier, they're not only with the operator, but many key positions in the community turn over at a frequent level in some communities. So we believe that having the constant communication and a touch base, if you will, every 6 months, helps us as agencies and technical assistance providers to appreciate the current level of assistance that might be needed in the community. And it also is intended to assure that the leaders in the community are aware of the evaluation criteria and the funding processes and are focusing on this not just at one time during the year. The score in the fall is used for informational purposes only.
I'd just like to say something right here. Right now, we're going to move on to the next page, and we're probably not going to get done. You're probably going to have to come back. It's a $2 billion conversation we're having here, and to get rid of the honey bucket out of the home and get water in the house. So, with that being said, I'm just going to throw this out there for an action item to come back. It might be March, it might be April, it might be May, but I'd like to for this committee to see how we're going to execute $2 billion, a timeline to do that. You know what I'm saying? We would like to see that. And I'd like to work with your office, our office, to get the presentation ready.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
On your timeline, we should be a little earlier while it's fresh on our mind, because if we're going to have legislation that's going through, we need to to have it ready to go. So I'd like to have them come back earlier than March or April.
I don't disagree. I just, it's a tall order. I know you guys here at this table, three of you, gave me an action item as a commissioner one time, and it took me 12 months to execute it. So on a paragraph. And I appreciate the support when I was on the other end of the table. So in that ask, how many people do you have in your office doing a deep dive on the IJA funding to make sure we don't leave a dollar on the table? And so that would go along with this other question. So please continue. Page 12.
So in your handout, you have a copy of our best practices scoring criteria. We've summarized at a high level that criteria here. So the basis of the capacity assessment is housed in the Safe Drinking Water Act. By federal regulation, the state of Alaska is obligated for all public water systems. So those are water systems that serve more than 25 people on an average for at least 60 days in a year. Before they can be approved for operations, they have to demonstrate a minimum level of technical, financial, and managerial capacity. So while we're focused on how that applies to the Village Safe Water funding process, this is something that is conducted in a variety of ways for all public water systems before they're able to operate. And so we put that evaluation at the beginning of our process, as I mentioned before, to make sure that we're committing funds to systems that can get that approval and move forward. Everything that's incorporated into the best practices is something that the community is already obligated to do for some other reason. There's state and federal regulations that require them to have certified operators. The one exception is preventative maintenance plans, but that's the one thing that the communities can do and have control over to improve the long-term success of their utilities is to have a plan for maintenance and implement that plan. So we look at compliance with drinking water regulations only in the context of monitoring and reporting. Are they collecting the samples that are required and doing the reporting? So if a community is, if their water source has a, let's say, high arsenic, which isn't something that is the fault of the operator, it's an engineering challenge, we don't look at that as a compliance consideration. It's simply, is the operator doing the sampling that they're required and doing the reporting that they're required? We look at whether or not the community has an individual who's attended at least one utility management training. The Rural Utility Business Advisor Program has a large variety of these trainings, and they provide them both in person and now on through video training. And they have a reimbursement, travel reimbursement for individuals who are able to travel. There's a lot of opportunity there to make that an easy 5 points to obtain. We look at whether or not the governing body meets regularly and discusses important business like finances. We also evaluate whether or not the community has a budget and has a budget for the utility. Revenue is probably the area that creates the most challenge for many of the communities, just because it is difficult, especially in a community that has just a washed area, to generate sufficient revenues. But it's not just are they bringing in enough money, it's are they budgeting correctly, and how are they allocating local subsidies.
Senator Wilson, before I go to him, I'd like to just say on this technical, on the operator certification and the preventative maintenance, I don't know how you got it weighted, but it should be weighted pretty heavily on these applications, because you got to be able to take care of it if you got it. And Avtec's a great place to send these potential operators of these systems. Senator Wilson, then Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Earlier in the presentation, you guys may have stated that with the additional $2 billion that's going to be allocated to Alaska, that everyone's going to have sort of on that safe water. So what, do we still need to go through the funding sheets in terms of score criteria? Would that still be used with that $2 billion, or would that just be obsolete?
Senator Wilson, through the chair. Just to clarify, the infrastructure bill allocated $3.5 billion to the Indian Health Service. That number correlates to the nationwide compilation of all of the projects identified in the Indian Health Service Sanitation Deficiency System database. We all enter all of the known project needs, and that is what the Indian Health Service uses to prioritize projects. Alaska's portion of that was about 2.1 when that number was developed.
2.1 what?
Billion.
Thank you.
So it's our expectation that approximately that amount will come to the state, but Indian Health Service is still going through the process of making decisions about how that national funding will be allocated. While I sit on the review committee to look at and participate in the discussion of how Indian Health Service is going to allocate those funds, I have a very small voice because I don't represent any of the dollars in that conversation. Village Safe Water will continue to get approximately the same amount of funding from federal agencies as we have, although the bill did authorize slightly higher levels in the course of the next 5 years, although it didn't appropriate that money. So Village Safe Water still is going to be in the business of funding new projects at approximately the same rate that we have been. We just now are a much smaller portion of what's being allocated on an annual basis. So we will continue to have a scoring criteria for our funding decisions, even though we'll be offering the smaller portion of the total funding available.
And you mentioned a key word there, and if I misspeak, you correct me on the record. The allocations is there, but the appropriation is yet to be made.
That's correct.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at the first point up there, you talked about some of the technical issues that are there, and sometimes people need to be educated. I don't have a problem with that because we have to have a certain criteria that needs to be met in order for them to go ahead and, you know, take care of what kind of water we're going to be drinking. But I guess what are the alternatives if there are shortcomings within the community for the personnel that's there? What alternatives do you have besides, hey, you just don't have it and you're not getting any funding, which I find a problem with? Let's find a way to go ahead and get them eligible or get them up there. And the other thing I was going to ask you was what kind of time frame can we put these alternatives into place for?
Through the chair, there's a lot of things there. My section manages the operator certification program. So we have a number of initiatives at any given moment working with operators to try and help them achieve their required level of certification. It is definitely challenging, and we're constantly developing new tools. We are preparing to do some outreach to our customers on what type of technical assistance do they need from us, and we have some opportunities, hopefully, with the bill and some of the funding that we'll discuss later to expand on our technical assistance and training opportunities, and we'd like some insight on what exactly the communities would most benefit from and how do we develop that targeting at them. We don't have a mechanism for sending an operator to a community that doesn't have one. We do spend a little over $2 million a year funding the remote maintenance worker program to provide support to the operators, and oftentimes I think that helps just in a morale situation for operators that they have somebody they know that they can call at all hours of the day and can get some advice and assistance. But it continues to be a challenge to have well-trained, knowledgeable operators who can also be certified.
Last question, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up.
Has to do with what kind of time frame, since time is of the essence for many times as you're trying to construct a situation, what kind of time frame do these alternatives have for this community to go ahead and be eligible? As is pointed out there, in the top of the slide there, if they're not eligible.
Through the chair, I guess we do an evaluation for funding purposes once a year. And for the communities that are unserved, and I hope I'm answering your question, and you please let me know if I'm not, but we will, over the course of probably the next 3 years, as the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium finishes those planning projects, we will have an identified path forward for serving those unserved communities. So some of those may be ready a year from now, some 2 and 3 years down the road. So we have time now to look at those planning documents that are starting. Now is the time for us to be focusing on providing as much support as we can to the communities in the course of that development so that they will be eligible to apply for funding at the end of that planning document. And so some of the communities, there will be 2 to 3 years where we can focus on that attention.
With all due respect, Ms. Bohan, if I could continue, Mr. Chairman. With all due respect, Ms. Bohan, the sentiment within the community is that you are not there to necessarily support what they've got going on. And so there is a perspective, and those people out there in the smaller villages are the ones that are suffering or not having what is considered a mainstay here in metropolitan Alaska, where you've got water, running water and sewer. And so I don't they're getting the feeling that there's a lot of support within your division. Mr. Chairman, I could ask Mr. Bates a question, since he's the division of water.
Sure.
Mr. Bates, as you look at the issue that's at hand, and you've been around, like you say, over 20 years in one way or the other, and after the 2015 change from eligibility and the funding relief, I guess, do you see things from an optimistic standpoint or a pessimistic standpoint? And I ask you that question not because of your longevity only, but because I have seen over this period of time where Gullivan didn't have, we're dealing with rainwater and things like that and melting snow and ice, and now we're in a better situation, obviously, but there are other communities out there who are back where Gullivan was 20 years ago. I guess, do you remember the question?
For the record, since it's been a little while, Randy Bates, Director of Water. Senator Olson, through the chair, absolutely optimistic. I recognize that there are challenges not only within our system and our best practice scoring, but there are challenges in the communities that we have to find a way to overcome. I think that particularly from an optimistic standpoint, what we have in place, what Ms. Bohan is working towards, and what the infrastructure bill will provide us is just, as I said, a transcendent opportunity to transform the communities from a safety and health standpoint. We're tremendously excited and optimistic about that as an opportunity to provide. We are partner heavy in our relationship on these projects and the implementation of Village Safe Water. We rely upon our partners at ANTHC and at RUBA. And when we're talking specifically about the funding eligibility, we are in charge of the technical side of things. We work directly with the community to build capacity, empower them on that technical score. Our partners at DCRA within Commerce are absolutely in charge of and our partners at ANT, of ANTC, of delivering the managerial and financial aspects of that training. There's no, if your question earlier, Senator, was what's the time frame for their eligibility, it's ongoing. It's a forever process, and we want to build capacity. We want to empower the communities to have that capacity so that the infrastructure and the builds and the millions that you are investing in those communities are maintained in a safe and healthy manner for the long term, not just from the point of build, but after that. And that's what the robust eligibility criteria are about, is making sure the community can get it and then maintain it going forward. So I am tremendously optimistic. I absolutely believe in this program, and there's a lot of opportunity coming. There's a lot of opportunity we're exploring through Ms. Bohan's program, and it's there's room for improvement. I've heard Senator Hoffman, I've heard yourself, I'm aware of the challenges and communities that we have at stake here, but I look forward to continuing to make this a viable product to bring safety, sanitation to our rural communities.
Senator Wilson, were you next? And then Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question on the sort of the $2 billion, or a two-part question for IHS. Is that just to get the communities up to that 55% level or greater? And if sort of in the funding or the eligibility in terms of IHS, some of these facilities may not be adequate enough to be upgraded in terms of the age of the buildings and structures. So is any of that funding going to go toward new housing and homes in order to have structures and facilities that would be able to facilitate new water upgrades with this funding?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, I believe that the intention with the Indian Health Service funding would be to provide service to every serviceable home. Not every home necessarily will have the same solution. So there are some instances in some communities where to put pipe service to homes that are on the far reaches of the community, there may need to be a different solution for some individual homes. But the intention is to develop a plan to provide service to all of the homes. The funding that comes specifically for sanitation isn't eligible for use for building infrastructure, but for housing. But I understand that the infrastructure bill does include funding for housing that may be used to serve the purpose that you were describing. Because certainly, if you have more users to contribute to the rates, then the cost per individual home is less, and that's a benefit to the ratepayers as a whole. But that won't be coming through any of the sanitation funding.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. And maybe this is sort of what Senator Bishop had asked for before, but I think that this presentation, while thorough, sort of missed its mark. And I think what this committee would have wanted to see, this is what I would have liked to have seen, is more of a story. As in, here's what we've done the last 20 years. Here's where we did it. Here's a nice map. Here's some pictures of what it looked like. Here's what worked. Here's what didn't. Here's why it worked. Here's why it didn't. Here are the lessons learned. Here's what we're going to do going forward. Here's the pots of money. Here are some of the questions that we ask these communities, whether it be Togiak, whether it be Golovin, what have you. Here's where we think the next communities are going to be, and here's why. They're reaching out to us. They're actually working with us or not. Here's where we're going to take this money, and we're going to create an engineered system, and we're going to fly it out, boat it out, barge it out, snow machine out, what it is. Here's, we think it's going to be about 4 months of community. These are the kind of things I think that I'd like to see. This is technical ease. I don't know. You're talking a lot. It's not really telling us, I think, what we need. I don't know, Mr. Chairman. Can we hurry it up? I mean, we've got 15 minutes. Let's get through the last few slides. And we're
going to be done
at this slide today, and we're going to come back next week, and we're going to finish it.
With perhaps a story.
We're going to have a meeting with these people in the chair's office, and we're going to do some modification, because I'll just tell you this, the whole table. I would be losing sleep at night if I was in their position, how they're going to execute this money in combination with the AIP money, the transportation money. People, we have got a big job in front of us. That's all of us working together if we're going to execute this money and not let it go back to the federal government, in my opinion. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A big component of this is working with the housing authorities, and I'm wondering if you might comment upon the housing authorities building new homes and making sure that when these new homes are built, they at least have the infrastructure when they get piped systems that we don't have to put them on a list and later go in and retrofit. So I wonder if you might comment upon that, because that is a large task of unmet need as well, and we spend millions of dollars addressing our unmet housing needs in rural Alaska.
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, you make a very good point. It has not always been very successful, the communication between Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and Village Safe Water and the housing authorities to marry up projects. And so there have been many instances where homes are built without the internal piping or fixtures that are necessary for pipe service. And there hasn't always been good coordination about the location of those homes. And so it's something that we strive every year. We're working to improve those relationships, and it's going to be even more important now as things start to move much more quickly with so much funding, that we on the sanitation side know what is the plan moving forward for new home construction, so that we can ensure that the communities are also identifying and the engineers in our team are identifying what the corollary sanitation infrastructure is going to need to be and time those appropriately. We're not able to provide service through our federal funding to homes that don't already exist. So there is an inherent mismatch in the timing, but we can constantly strive to make that gap as small as possible.
Senator Wilson, then Senator Von Imhoff has the last question.
No, I don't have any more questions.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is a question that can be answered when they come back on terms of your line of questioning, in terms of how many communities each year do they plan, how many communities each year do they plan to facilitate with this upcoming appropriation of the federal funds? And I guess that's.
Yep, and that's going to be in next week's meeting. We're going to see a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year horizon. So thank you. Did you have one last question, Senator Olson?
I did. Since we're getting toward the end of the time, I'd like to go ahead and have let me make a comment first. There was an issue came up with the housing, whether there's money for that. But the latest I've heard is that places like Pilot Station, which was just here last week, were talking about they need houses leveled before they can adequately put piping into them. And so that's the other issue that is there. But more, what I have gotten more phone calls on has, and you've already touched on it, has to be the Unicleet situation, which over the last 2 years, they've had water issues that are out there looking like coffee when it comes out of there. I guess, what's the update on that? And that's what I would like to, and that's what they're listening for right now, is give us an update on where the department is at, where the division is at, and where are we with
that? Through the chair, I'm really excited about what we're able to do in Unalakleet right now. We've been, over the course of the last several years, drilling test wells to try and find a new, more appropriate water source, and I believe the design has completed. We've found the water source, and we're getting ready to move to construction this year for those new wells and a transmission line to town. In addition, we're working now to begin the design process for replacing all of the distribution system. That will be a multi-year process, but we'll be replacing all of the water piping in the ground.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. This concludes this morning's meeting. Our next meeting is 1 p.m., SB 72, Secondary School Civics Education. We have a CS and SB 80, First Hearing on Public Schools and Mental Health and Education. We are adjourned at 10:50.